$500 or $600 for a 6 month period would triple. So because the law lapsed, to protect myself the way I want to be protected, which I protect other people that I do damage to $1 million, I'm going to have to pay with some of the companies over $1,000 more on my policy.
Is that for one car or how many vehicles?
I've got four vehicles, but I keep about two of them or three of them active at the same time.
With a driving record, Dave?
Yep.
My insurance no is tickets. A lot more than that.
Not just for uninsured insurance you're speaking of.
Well, the reason this dynamic takes place is because the preferred companies won't offer that boosted up coverage, and because I do it with an umbrella policy, I keep my overall rates down, where I would have to buy a basic insurance, auto insurance policy up to that limit instead of mixing my umbrella with my other, so I could incur up to $1,000 additional to get $1 million worth of uninsured coverage, which is what I provide to other people that I insure now.
Representative Donnelly is correct. Typically, insurers don't offer real high limits on the automobile coverages. And the way the law is structured, it requires them to offer uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage only to the limits that you voluntarily purchase. Well, of course, if they don't let you buy more than $300,000, then the most that you can get on uninsured, underinsured motorists is $300,000. I'm not sure what the answer for that is. And I do it the same way, Representative Donnelly. I purchase an umbrella above my regular policy limits because that tends to be more efficient. But the requirement for an offer of uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage does not apply to that umbrella. I'm not sure that it's a good idea to require that, but nevertheless, that's a fact. It doesn't fit there. And I don't know if the umbrella policies typically include an underinsured, tongue is going, uninsured, underinsured coverage in that underlying umbrella. I suspect not, but I don't know that for a fact. I'd have to look at some forms.
It wouldn't seem reasonable for someone who is purchasing insurance and you're willing to pay up to $300,000, guarantee that if you cause an accident to someone else, you're going to compensate that up to $300,000. However, if you're going to insure yourself, you want to increase yours. Isn't it reasonable to believe that if you're insuring one purpose, that coverage should be also what you might seek for your own protection?
That's the argument.
Isn't that sort
That's reasonable, yes. And that's kind of the argument that we've used and did use several years ago when the mandatory law passed, with the uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage. Plus, we expanded that to property damage because at that time there were so few states that had a property damage feature in their uninsured motorist coverage that you could count them on one hand. I mean, that's not one of the typical coverages. So we looked at that. You're right. And I think if there were more of a demand for it or more of an awareness, people would probably start to be able to find it because there's always somebody that'll fill in that niche.
Yeah.
At what cost at this point, I don't know.
You know what this reminds me of?
No, don't tell me. It's Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for the leeway for letting me comment on some of these things.
It's an educational process for all of us.
The real concern also that it extends beyond the underinsured and uninsured motorist coverage goes to people who don't own automobiles. Because although that's a means that some of us can protect ourselves if we own an automobile for up to what our policy limits are, which I feel is wholly insufficient most of the time for a catastrophic injury, if you're a pedestrian and you don't own a car, or you're a child and you don't own an automobile, or if you just happen to use the bus, you don't have that alternative to provide yourself that kind of protection. That's why the Mandatory Act, to me, is especially important for those types of people.
Remember that argument 5 years ago, but it's still valid today. You know. Well,
very good.
I certainly appreciate your patience. And
yes, sir. Those will be ready in about a week. You're welcome to hang on to that.
I expect to finish this in one day. I'm sure that we're going to have some work sessions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You'll be available to come back. And
anytime.
Didn't we order a couple
Chairman,
hundred of those booklets from you?
The representative from the Department of Law had to leave, Mr. Chairman, and there is a proposed amendment from the Department of Law, which I agree with, is a technical, basically a technical.
We have a number of proposed amendments here covering different problems that are perceived out there, so we would have to look at them all. But, right, we have that.
Can Mr. Brown tell me how the EM deal works in Anchorage when they sent in? Do you know? doesn't know. Could you find out for me?
Off the record now, or something else. off the record.
No, what?
We're still in session.
Thanks. Mr. Chairman, I'm Bill Brown, Division of Motor Vehicles, Department of Public Safety.
It has to do with this because it's a checkoff. It's a checkoff in a little form, and we send it in to DMV, right? Along with our little EM cards, right? Okay, and a couple of times I've forgotten that, and they've sent it back and said, you guys forgot to put your little emissions control thing in there. So I sent it back. So then I want to know how they do that. Do they check to see if it passes, or do they just check to see if it's in there? And what are you going to do with the checkoff in this bill? So it is a question that relates to this bill.
Basically, on the emission inspection program, we just verified that the form is in there and that the person that did the inspection says that it meets the criteria for the municipality of Anchorage or the borough in Fairbanks. And that's why you might get some of them back, is either that form's not in there, or if somebody submitted a form and it wasn't checked off by a garage showing that it was certified and passed the inspection, then they would also get it back.
So then what would you do with this bill?
Basically, with this bill, what our plan would be is there would be a statement on the application where the person would sign certifying that they are insured and plan to remain insured while they operate that vehicle on the roadways.
You'd ask for a certified signature.
Well, they would just have a signature on there. It may be before DMV rep, and it may not be. If they do it by mail, they would just have to sign that they are insured and intend to remain insured while they operate that vehicle.
Okay. So now, let's say you're in an accident. And the troopers come, and they call you up. You know, they call your license number up, right? They do that, and so then that's one thing they're going to check, right? Is there going to be an extra penalty if you signed the box that you had insurance and you don't have insurance?
Mr. Chairman, that is a section in the bill, and that's one of the amendments I think Department
right
of
now,
Law proposed to make that from a felony to a misdemeanor.
Okay, so that's one of the things they check. Let's say you get caught for speeding, and they dial up your license number. Are they going to look at that, too?
Whether or not you're insured? Mr. Chairman, no, they would not.
Okay, it's only in an accident.
Well,
where there's damage.
Basically, Mr. Chairman, if this bill passes as proposed, it would depend on how fast you're speeding. If it's a 6 or more point violation, you would have to show proof of insurance to the court.
Hasn't that always been in effect, though?
That has been in effect. We did stop administering that July 1 of 1987 as a result of budget decrements and loss of positions. It is proposed to be reactivated, or it is part of the law that's before you, and we ask that either that section of the law be deleted because we cannot administer with current staff, or that our staff be increased so that we can administer it fully.
I have no objections to eliminating it.
I think Chairman Donnelly suggested eliminate it one time too, didn't you, in your committee? And rather than put it on and not be able to do it, and then that position was changed again, I don't know how, but that's something we looked at, right?
They're always good to me about only giving me 4 points. From when I told them that rookie in Travis Creed has got to be eliminated, huh? I have to be good to listen.
Well, the difference between a misdemeanor and a felony was what? Capital punishment? That's your bag.
Mr. Chairman?
If the committee's interested, I can explain the penalty levels too. To the next time.
Go ahead, Dave. Probably all stuck to someday.
Sure. Because there's a separate section of the law that deals with what happens if you falsify a motor vehicle registration document. It makes it a penalty. It makes it a felony. And my understanding is the reason that law is that way because usually when people falsify those documents it's because it's a stolen vehicle. And so it's been a penalty since time as far back, probably statehood. When we did this law, we didn't intend for the signature thing to be a felony. We put something in there, it'd be a Class A misdemeanor, but because we didn't clean up that, we didn't know that there was this whole separate section that dealt with a whole separate issue with motor vehicle falsification. We had a conflict, and that's what the proposed amendment from the Department of Law cleans up, and I do endorse that proposal. It would make it a Class A misdemeanor for doing it in this case. Any other fraudulent acts with motor vehicle registration
is already under an existing law as a felony. We wanted to separate this out from that, only make it a misdemeanor. That parallels, Mr. Chairman, the penalties that are in existing law for the crimes of tampering with public records by, among other things, placing false information in them. That's a Class A misdemeanor under existing law. And unsworn falsification, that's signing a public document while not under oath with the intention of deceiving a public official. That is, under existing law, Class A misdemeanor. So we're placing this signing under this in the same category as those two crimes.
Thank you. Well, before we adjourn, I'd just like to clarify one thing. I have a copy of that at Division Insurance Van, and obviously you did bring to the attention of the public that there was something in place. So I am in error thinking that you didn't. I was probably looking at the newspaper articles, editorials, and maybe some of the letters that Representative Donnelly sent me. But you are correct in putting this up. Thank you very much.